You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Hour, and we're going to talk cricket. I know many of you love sport. I was devastated. I really hoped that we would win the last T20 and, just end on a high after managing such an incredibly impressive batting performance, batting first, and then we ended up still losing. I was actually busy when the second half of the match was taking place. I took for granted that obviously we'll be able to defend that total, and in the end we didn't. But the English are gone, and the question is, where the hell have we gone wrong? We've not exactly been doing well, the Proteas, for a while now, but there were signs of the possibility, a hint of a unit maybe coming together, and then we seem to be plagued by all sorts of inconsistencies. Now, I think we really need to get a grip on what the strengths and weaknesses are of this current squad, and how do we begin to rebuild so that we can actually perform consistently and do much better, particularly with the Aussies who are here as well, the first match tomorrow. And joining me for this conversation is, most importantly, you, a cricket lover, so please call in, give me your sense of the last couple of weeks. Who do you think stood out? Who did brilliantly? What do you make of our new captain? Who do you think should be out? Who should be so lucky to still be picked? And then I also have three excellent cricket enthusiasts and broadcasters who are absolutely brilliant, who are joining me, and they are scattered all over the place, but we're going to have a lekker conversation nonetheless. In London, I think he is. Firstly is Daniel Gallen, a freelance sports journalist. I'm an EWN correspondent. Absolutely love Daniel's work. Daniel, good morning. How's it?
Good morning, Eusebius. Good. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm very good. I would have been better if we won that last match. but it is what it is. Thanks for coming on the show, despite the fact that you are very busy. Love your work. And then Pela Sanders Iqaba, sports journalist as Newsroom Africa, former colleague here, and fellow old Greyman. How's it?
Good morning, Eusebius. How are you?
I'm good. Again, it would have been better if we, as we say in the Eastern Cape, if we had given it horns, boots, which we didn't exactly do, but we'll ask about why we hadn't in a second. And last but not least, KFM presenter, who loves cricket as much as I do, Sibongile Mafu. Hello.
Hi, from sunny Cape Town, Eusebius.
Sunny, don't spoil it for us. It's a bit overcast here in Jersey. Are you well?
I'm very, very good, and I'm so happy to be with the three of you this morning.
Yeah, so we are literally in four different places, so let's do this. We are instantly friends. I hereby declare us friends. Don't wait for me to ask questions. Just butt in, and let's have a lekker dynamic conversation as we go along. Daniel, I'm going to start with you, because I know that you are a numbers person and not just a narrative person. If we look at the last couple of weeks, and we can dive into whichever aspects you want, batting, fielding, the team as a unit, captaincy, how would you rate our performance against the English?
I mean, if you're asking me to put a number on it, I think the important thing is probably to differentiate between the test team and the white ball teams. The test team was a failure. Was it a failure? I guess given the context of what had come before with the off-field problems, which have been well documented, I would say that they probably just about passed. I think 3-1 to England was probably a predictable scoreline for many who'd been paying attention. I guess the manner of the defeats were quite concerning, particularly the defeats in Port Elizabeth and the Wanderers. Port Elizabeth was probably the worst test that I've seen South Africa play at home for a long time. And that one session where Faf du Plessis had 8 fielders on the boundary at the Wanderers, and Patterson and Hendricks were being made to look like village trundlers by England's numbers 10 and 11 was probably one of the most disappointing sights, especially at the mighty Bull Ring where visiting batters have been reduced to, you know, quivering puddles. So that was quite disappointing. The white ball team, I thought there were a lot of positives. Themba Bavuma and Quince de Kock at the top of the order was not something I was expecting to explode in the way that they did. They look as good as anything in the world. Ngidi's bowling at the death, yes, perhaps needs some work, but let's not forget that he did win a match seemingly on his own at one stage. And with Rabada coming back and Dale Steyn returning to fitness, I think there are a lot of positives for the white ball. So if you ask me to put a number on it, I would say 5 out of 10 for the red ball and about 7.5 out of 10 for the white ball. Is that right?
I think I probably would go along with that, particularly your qualification with the test, right? Because we almost forget the recent history preceding the test series against England. I mean, we really, really were down and out. The fact that we even went to Newlands one up was a minor miracle, quite frankly. D'Alessandro, would you agree with that, roughly speaking?
Yeah, look, I think I would agree with what Daniel said, particularly in differentiating between the three formats that South Africa has played against England. I think the test result was almost expected given what had gone on before and in the build up to that test series. It was a team low on confidence. There were far too many debutants, and the opportunity is important to give. But it was given because of so many things that had gone wrong in South African cricket over the last sort of 18 months. And I think that result was almost predictable in how South Africa were going to fare in that test series. But I think Daniel got it spot on. That Port Elizabeth result was probably right up there with the one against Sri Lanka a year ago. So you almost look at it and you think, South Africa's red ball cricket, it needs a hell of a lot of work. And there's still so much work that Boucher and his coaching staff need to put into that team. And it's not only his responsibility or the national setup's responsibility to make sure that test side is right back to where it was a couple of years ago under the leadership of Grant Smith.
Yeah.
The provincial coaches, the franchise coaches, all need to have a helping hand in trying to develop good first-class cricketers that are able to seamlessly fit into the international fold and make sure that South Africa's test cricket is really strong. And of course, the white ball stuff was really refreshing to see. We often speak about Themba Bavuma and, the sort of general narrative around Themba Bavuma is that he's failed in red ball cricket, but it was so lovely to see him unshackle himself and have no inhibitions about how he approached his white ball cricket, which was
other than his fear of getting a century or a half century, but
he seems to be a bit allergic to that in recent times. But I think he's just sort of let go of all those fears and what people are going to say to him. And
that's very true. Yeah. I want to come back to that because I think it deserves a discussion all on its own. Sibongile, I know we sometimes, as South Africans who are obsessed both with sport and politics, we analogize from the one to the other, but it's tempting for good reason. Our performances of the Proteas sometimes mirror the way we often feel about our country. The one moment we have incredible high and we are all elated and it's kumbaya, we're sitting at Mzoli's on beer crates, black and white together. The next moment we are deeply divided and sluggish.
No, for sure. I mean, we talk about what a roller coaster ride this summer has playing England. It's been a roller coaster ride for the past 2.5 years being a Proteas cricket fan.
Yes.
And it's been a roller coaster ride being a South African citizen.
Yeah.
And I feel as though, with the Proteas where we've had so much success over the years, it was actually quite jarring over the last couple of seasons to see them being so poor, not only playing away from home, but also playing at home and losing at home, which I think has been a shock to the system. I mean, looking at the, test series against England, we still have that opening combination problem where Dean Elgar, can't seem to settle with a partner and he can't seem to, settle in his own batting.
Are you saying he's got commitment issues?
I feel as though he's, he's struggling to put a ring on it. we saw a bit of Aidan Markram before he was out. And then, of course, Peter Milan came in to join him. And that was, for me, the root cause of our batting frustrations, that we couldn't get off to a good start. And we saw that in our white ball cricket, when Quinton de Kock and Themba Bavuma kind of got the team off to a good start, the potential that, was unlocked because of that. So
Sibongile, can I ask you this, right? And I want the other two to chip in after you respond. If we step back from it, right? For me, it seems like as fans and as journalists, we can look at this in one of at least two ways, probably many more. You can either say, let's deep dive into the particular parts of the game, top order, middle order? Do we have all rounders? What's happening in the bowling unit, right? And that's very important plumbing. And we need to go there, and we've got enough time this hour. Or do you also philosophically, as it were, say to yourself, you know what? It is the story of sport the world over that you go through highs and lows over a long period of time.
No, I agree with that. I think because we are so passionate about not only our cricket teams, you know, as South Africans, we are passionate about our rugby, our football, you know, all of these sporting codes that we invest our hearts into, that when we lose, it hurts, it affects us. And I speak not only as a cricket broadcaster, but as a cricket fan. You know, we are in this roller coaster with these players. And I think for me, the most frustrating part is realizing that the talent is there, the incredible, you know, batting, bowling, fielding acumen is there, but then it is not shown to its full potential out on the field. And we can talk about the drama behind the scenes. I mean, there's been a change of leadership. We're in a transition period. But I think there are enough frustrations within, you know, our cricketing space right now that warrants, you know, a lot of people kind of feeling down at the moment, because these are people who are really good at playing cricket, but they're not showing that to us at the moment. For me, I like to focus on the young players coming through. Kagiso Rabada, for example, who has had the weight of the world on his shoulders for the last couple of seasons, wasn't at his best during the Test series, but he still managed to get wickets. And for me, that's a positive in a way, because when he does eventually get going, oh boy, he's going to be very, very scary. So I'm glad he went off on holiday for the last couple of weeks. I think he was in America watching some basketball over the last week and kind of giving him a break, because I think there are stars in the team, you know, your Kagiso Rabadas, your Quinton de Kock, who will obviously, you know, take a lot of the responsibility on their shoulders. But I need to start seeing some of the other guys coming through as well. And
can we talk about Rabada just for a minute or two? Pelasanda, do you think that he's overburdened?
Slightly, you know. I think particularly before the Cricket World Cup in England last year, I think South Africa missed so many opportunities to try and refresh him and make sure his batteries were fully charged to sort of give a big onslaught in that competition. He did look off colour for so long, and he's looked very much off colour for a long time. You know, he's played a lot of cricket over the last sort of two and a half to three years for South Africa without a really good break. And I'm glad Bosch really touched on the fact that he was allowed now to go away for a little bit, spend some time away from the game, watch another sport. You know, a lot of cricketers' minds work in a funny way. You know, when they're away from the game, that's where they're most focused, and they come back even stronger. And I think Kagiso Rabada is going to, we're going to see the best of him now after taking this short break. And I think, you know, we need to manage our players a little bit better.
Absolutely.
It's the same with Faf. You know, he's played a lot of cricket, and for him to actually get this break also over this England white ball series was a good thing. And we need a fresher, more focused Faf that can contribute with the bat for South Africa for at least the next foreseeable future.
Well, Graham Smith certainly agrees with the danger of being both a poster boy, by the way, which is a theme on its own, and also not being rested adequately, Rabada, that is, and said about him, and I quote, "He's a poster boy and we need to develop more poster boys. Too much has been put on his shoulders as well. He is on every ad, playing every game. He's carrying the can. If he doesn't perform well, we are in trouble. I think it's a good thing he's being rested in the series. We need to see some other people step up and start filling that void and taking some pressure off him. Maybe that will help as well." Do you agree with that, Daniel?
I do agree with that. I think what Graham Smith doesn't touch on in that quote, although that quote is from a kind of an impromptu media session with a handful of journalists. I think Pillar was there as well. Is that the reason why he's the poster boy and why he's been asked to carry the can almost by himself is because he is black African, and there is a worrying dearth of quality black cricketers in South Africa. I mean, it is an incredible damning indictment on the developmental structures of South African cricket that only one black African took to the field at any time during the four-match test series. I mean, beginning in 2020, that to think that the Proteas are more lily white than they were 5-10 years ago is really worrying. So, yes, Rabada has been asked to be the poster boy. Yes, he has been asked to carry this burden of not only being the leader of the attack, but also to represent something something so important to so many people. But the reason why he's been asked to carry it himself is because he doesn't have a buddy with him. He doesn't have another black cricketer on his level. And you know, Graham Smith was saying how Cricket South Africa have spent hundreds of millions of rands on the transformation narrative and the fight for a better representative team. But my question to him and to Cricket South Africa is, well, where's that money gone?
Yeah.
What has happened? So if we're asking Rabada to kind of be so many things to so many people as well as lead the attack, he obviously does need a helping hand. Lungi Ngidi's injury before the start of the test series didn't help. He would have played every game if he was fit. If Temba hadn't got injured before the start of the series, yes, he may have played every match, although his test form was worrying and he was kind of on the edge, as it were. But I think that's probably the most concerning thing about the red ball formats of the tour, is that how the we are still talking about the demographics of the country, and that's also why there were so many more positives with the white ball series. We saw Themba Vuma come in, we saw Lutwa Sepamla come in, Ngidi, as we said. So yeah, as we know in South Africa, the issues aren't just on the field, are they?
Pelisande, I wanted to get your views on that, right? Two broad but related questions, and let's run with it for a few minutes. Is there a demographic, or to be blunt, a racial problem in terms of the Proteas as a squad? And secondly, with your experience, and I think you and I have touched on this before on this platform, but just speak for me a little bit also, in addition to the first question, into the particular burden that comes with being seen as a black poster child of hashtag black excellence. If you are Themba Bavuma, for example, what are the pressures on you to do well in the four-day competition, to try and force your way back into the squad? I mean, psychologically and politically, what are the burdens that rest on such a pint-sized black South African batsman?
I think the first question is important, you see, is to try and understand as much as we possibly can. I think there is a big sort of demographic divide amongst the in any sport, especially at the highest level for South Africa. You know, we speak about Themba Bavuma and we speak about Lungi Ngidi or Kastos or Rabada. There are so many few and far between in terms of reaching the same quality as those guys, particularly from a batting point of view. You know, I think South Africa doesn't, you know, have too much of a big sort of trouble in producing talented black fast bowlers or bowlers. But the batting is one of the most crucial aspects of you know, developing, in terms of trying to develop the next Themba Bavuma. It's such a huge burden on a guy like Themba Bavuma to be the only person to have that weight on their shoulder to try and appease so many people from a black batsman point of view. You know, and Daniel's touched on it so adequately that, you know, Cricket South Africa says they've spent millions of rands trying to develop black sportsmen or black cricketers around the country. But, you know, the proof is in the pudding. Mm-hmm. And not a lot of that is being produced and is seen properly. You know, we speak about Themba, but if Temba's out, which other black batsman is there next in line? Or, you know, we need to develop those players as speedily as possible. You know, there's so many initiatives that Cricket South Africa has put in place to try and do that. But the question is, are they working? Are the regional performance centers working? Are the hubs working in trying to develop quality black batsmen? There are quite a few of them, but also there's another question on the other side of the coin, is that Are they given enough opportunity, particularly at franchise level, to prove their worth and their quality?
And what's the answer for you?
opportunity. I think so. I think you need to give them as much opportunity. Not
no, but are they getting it? Yeah. You know, there's some age-old debates around this question. Some will say there are many excellent over the years white South African batsmen who, when they were out of form, were allowed to play themselves back into form. You pick them on the basis of past performance and knowing that it's a matter of time before they come off form and they need to play themselves into form, and the only way is to spend time in the middle. Are there differences in terms of attitudes towards out-of-form black batsmen compared to white batsmen, or is that something that is just stoking racial fires?
I think, you know, sometimes it's difficult to sort of answer that question. You see this. I think the most important thing, or the thing that I've noticed, is that a lot of our franchises are giving black batsmen or black cricketers around an opportunity just to fill or to meet the racial quota requirement. Mm. And not because they feel like that this player has potential to play for the Springboks or for the Proteas in the next couple of years. So yeah. I think that's the most important thing for us to try and fix, particularly at the franchise level, is that you need to give a black batsman or a black cricket player an opportunity because you actually feel like he has what it takes to make it to the highest level.
Sibongile, you know, there's another psychosocial as well as a political dimension to the story of Themba Bavuma that's really interesting. And it's a story that goes into a broader context around black life the world over. The burden that comes with being black embodied, and I'm sure as a black woman as well, you particularly feel this, where for some people who are not used to your presence, where they'd be in the newsroom as a broadcaster in the creative industries, suddenly everything you do and say becomes a representation of all black people or all black women. You're not treated just as an individual, but as a type, as a particular group identity. And a fellow fan had said on social media, and I think also a scribe, something that resonated with me when Themba went in and he was playing and he was selected again after his fantastic knock of 180 runs to get back into the squad again. And someone was saying, when Themba plays, every single run that he scores, it feels, when you're a fan watching it, as if you are betting with him.
Sure, yeah, no, I feel that. And even on a personal level, I mean, talking to three men on the radio about cricket and being the only woman, you know, in this space, being on a morning show in Cape Town, on a primetime morning show, being the sports anchor, there aren't many women doing that in the country. And you're right, like the burden is different because the lens through which people criticize your work is different.
Yes.
So, for example, Themba Bavuma said in an interview that it's not so much the dropping part, because all players get dropped and they all go through slumps and struggling with form and all of that. It's the awkwardness from his side around the talks of transformation. And what really irks him the most is that when you do well, transformation is never spoken about.
I love that quote. Badly, that was such a beautiful quote.
Exactly. And then when you do badly, then transformation is thrown into the top of the agenda. So I thought that was a great quote from him as well, because you feel as though, you know, when you look at Themba's performances over the years and you kind of take a magnifying glass in terms of how he has performed. Yes, his numbers don't look great on a surface level, but if you kind of have been following his journey and where the Proteas have been batting wise, and you see where he's shown up for the team in those difficult situations, then it starts looking a bit different, where you see the value that he brings to the team. I think it also requires fans and people who enjoy cricket to work a little bit harder, especially if you're a South African fan, when you look at, you know, not only how we play, but the players that fit into the team and what that means in terms of how you look at the criticisms of everything. So I think it's more about educating yourself and how you share commentary around transformation in this country and being responsible in sharing your commentary around that.
It's 10:30. What do you think as a cricket fan, as someone who loves sport? What were the highlights? What went right? Why, over a longer period of time, have we been sluggish as a cricketing nation? Give us a call. Have your say. You can agree, disagree with my expert guest. 011-883-0702. The three excellent voices you are hearing are those of Daniel Gallen, who's a freelance sports journalist and EWN correspondent. Bela Sandesikwaba, who's a sports journalist at Newsroom Africa and KFM presenter and broadcaster, who is excellent in her knowledge on cricket as well. Sibongile Mafu. So more in the second half of this conversation.
We're listening to you. Go to 702.co.za.
25 minutes before 11 o'clock, we're talking cricket, and we're having a lovely conversation. Many of you listening and opining on social media. Some of you have just called in. We'll take your calls in a second. And I'm still in conversation with three excellent guests joining me. Over the seas, Daniel Gallen, who is an excellent freelance sports journalist. Pila Sandesikwaba, also very good at Newsroom Africa, used to be a colleague of mine here at ProMedia, and KFM presenter, and also excellent cricket enthusiast and broadcaster Sibongile Mafu, who's also with us in this conversation. Let's hear from other fans before I go back to my fellow journalist. John, good morning.
Morning. Lovely conversation this morning. I'm looking forward to giving a few of my unreserved comments.
Yeah, well, go for it.
I would really like to maybe get Cricket South Africa engaged with somebody like Rassie Erasmus. You know, he walked in 18 months ago into a very broken team. And he obviously said the right thing. You know, and I believe that we have an amazing cricket culture in this country. And I think we've got enough talent, and the skill levels are exceptional. And I wonder if we need to be spending a lot more time with mental attitudes and maybe just building a sense of belief in the squad. And you guys made a comment earlier. You know, the minute our opening partnership in a T20 scores 60, 70, 80 runs without loss, everybody in the team believes that they can go play in that format. And to see our team playing in an aggressive format with belief was very refreshing. And I believe we can be world champions year in and year out. We can be the number one test side in the world. You know, I think the world's top six batsmen can come from South Africa in a month or two, just because of the quality of people we have here. I'd like to know what your panel has to say.
Okay, that's a really interesting thought. We'll come back to it in a second. Thank you, John. Des, good morning.
Hi. I want to pick up on that point of Rafi. He chose the best team. Whether they played in South Africa or overseas, he chose the best team. We say if you play overseas, you're a cricketer, you can't play here. What rubbish is that? We've got a good death bowler in Kyle Abbott. He performs wonderfully against the English in their own backyard. We don't pick him because he plays overseas. Mm. What nonsense. Learn from Rassie. And then we've got drainless cricketers. Fish Lacquayo in the last match, bowling to Stokes. He bowls three wide Yorkers. Stokes can't get to them. And then he changes and he pitches them in the middle of the pitch, and he gets hits for three sixes in a row. Mm. I mean, where's the brains?
Hands off, especially Kwaya. He is my perv. He's so hot, he can do nothing wrong in my eyes.
And then there's John Smuts, okay?
What about him? I also struggled there. Again, I have irrational loyalties because he went to the same school as me and Pilar Sunday. But what do you make of him?
John Smuts, re-chasing the game. We have to score runs.
Mm.
He leaves balls outside the off stump as though he's playing in a test match.
Yeah, that's certainly valid. Okay, let's jump into some of this. There's a big picture issue with John and then some particular issues with Des. Now, John also reminds me of a report that I've seen. You guys will probably even be more on top of it than me, with Steve Waugh saying he could be happy to coach South Africa. But again, raising the horrible C word, that we are chokers, that is a key reason why we are inconsistent. But it speaks to John's issue around mental well-being and mental health. Let's start firstly with you, Daniel. This has now ever since readmission, quite frankly, onto the international stage, we have been haunted by the specter of lacking mental toughness.
Yeah, it's so hard for me to comment on it. I mean, people that are experts in the field of mental toughness and mental skills in sports haven't quite figured it out. I mean, Just on that point about Rusty, I mean, that's a very easy answer. That's why Graham Smith is in charge. Graham Smith is the Rusty Erasmus equivalent. And let's not forget that when after Rusty's first season, the Springboks had won 50% of their matches, and people were wondering, well, is this the guy? Should we have given him such a long contract? Mm-hmm. People had their doubts about Rusty when he first came, and even after the first full year. So I think it's a little early to be judging this new regime under Graham and Mark. Mm-hmm. The second one about brainless cricketers, I was having a conversation with a colleague on Twitter the other day who was commenting. He made a comment about why can't the Proteas practice bowling Yorkers? Chris Jordan is the English cricketer, able to bowl Yorkers. And my response was, these are elite cricketers. They are trying to bowl Yorkers. The bowling of Yorkers is a very difficult thing to do. You know, when the caller is calling Andile Petlakwayo a 6'3" chiseled cricketer who's at the top of his game and has the potential to be a world great, is being hit out of the park by Ben Stokes. Well, it's not me who's hitting Andile Petlakwayo out of the ground. It's Ben Stokes.
Exactly.
The best cricketer in the world. So I think there is something that sports fans kind of need to look. I get it. We all drank the Mandela Kool-Aid in 95 and 96.
But we need a bit of perspective, don't we, Daniel? Like Sibongile said, we need to reason about this in ways that are context specific. If you're being hit out of the park by some fat slob who's retired and 50 years old, that's one thing. Mm. But if an excellent all-rounder at the top of his career is doing so, well, it's par for the competitive course.
Yes, exactly. And I think, you know, Orwell had a great line about, like, as if there was a South African way of hitting a ball, as if there's an English way of kicking a ball. And I think when South African sports teams lose, we fall into the trap of thinking that they lost because they didn't care or because the Protea fire wasn't burning bright. And I think it's important just to get some perspective. This is a developing team. 2019 was probably the worst year cricket South Africa has ever endured. After the Hansi Crenia affair, what happened with the backroom staff was probably the biggest fiasco that has ever occurred since readmission. So I think some perspective is needed. And for me, there were enough positives, especially with the white ball. I mean, I agree with you. Anyone who comes at Petlakwayo needs to come at me first. I'm a big fan of his.
I love the guy to bits. I really, really do. Both for aesthetic reasons and cricketing reasons. Pilasander, you can jump in on anything, but there's a first part of Dez's question that we haven't got to. Either you must jump into that one as well, or Sibongile, because he also mentioned the fact that we have some excellent players that could perform some of these roles, like excellent death bowling, Kyle Abbott, and we lose them, whether we can't be a little bit less precious about the ability of people to be able to play for us, even if they are playing domestic cricket elsewhere.
Well, look, Lucy, I think, again, perspective needs to sort of take over a little bit. You know, some things aren't as clear cut as others. You know, the Kyle Abbott issue is obviously something that is beyond Cricket South Africa's control. You know, he decided to sign a callback contract, and callback contracts, you know, sort of force you to forego your international career. And those are personal choices for whatever reason that Kyle and some of the other callback players that signed contracts did, you know, and that's on them. You know, you can't really fault anyone.
Mm.
But I think particularly in John Smuts's case, you know, I'm also going to be a little bit biased because he went to the same school as me, but I think he's one of those guys that are adaptable. You know, he's still relatively young in his international experience, but he's got, you know, domestic experience that spans over 12 years. He's adaptable. He's able to bat anywhere in the top five. And I think a lot of people were asking, why is John Smuts batting at 4 or 5?
Well, he might open tomorrow, right? Would you pick him to open?
He might open tomorrow, definitely. He'll be, you know, as accomplished opening the batting as he would have if he came in at 5. You know, you want those cricketers that are able to bat anywhere in the top 5, you know, especially in white ball cricket. White ball cricket sort of gives you the sort of demand of picking players that are adaptable, that can come in anywhere between 1 and 5 and 6, which is something that is of vital importance, especially in white ball cricket.
Sibongile, a lot has happened in the last 7 minutes, from our mental toughness again being put under the spotlight to accusations of some brainless, beautiful cricketers.
I know. I mean, the helter-skelter of T20 cricket. And it also kind of poses the question, how much time do you give a player to settle in that team environment and to duplicate the performances that they show us in the domestic space? These are impressive cricketers. I mean, we can talk about, you know, John Smuts. We can talk about the success of Van der Dussen, who's, you know, transitioned beautifully into international cricket. Mm. But it's not always, again, easy in that space. I mean, Zubair Hamza, who's one of my favorite young and up-and-coming cricketers, who I was rooting for this season, and unfortunately struggled during the test matches and was kind of sent off back to domestic cricket, and has subsequently done well in the Momentum One Day Cup, scoring a couple of centuries in that space. Mm. You hope someone like that is able to come back in and impress for the Proteas. And that for me is the important part. Even these young players like Petlo Kwayo, who may encounter your Ben Stokes at the other end, who are hitting him for sixes, he is in the right space right now in that Proteas setup in terms of learning at 23 years old, in the fire, in the trenches, and growing as a cricketer every day. And let me tell you, he's been one of our best white ball cricketers over the last couple of seasons. Mm. And I think people remember the bad times more than the good times. We have very short memories as South African cricket fans. So I think let's also be fair in this space. I mean, I've also been critical of John Smuts when I'm just like, just hit the ball, you're brilliant. Why is our middle order struggling right now when John Smuts is at the crease? But again, this is after one or two games.
Okay, so, but the question's got to be asked, right? I mean, let's take the last T20 game, and I'm going to start with you, Sibongile, right? If you are scoring 222 runs, and that's what you're defending, your bowling unit should be able to defend that, surely. What went wrong just in that? If we take that game as an event and forget about the longer picture, what the hell went wrong there?
You know, part of me is like, we're playing the best white ball cricket team in the world.
Sure.
And when they fire, they can really score any amount of runs on offer. So there's that part of me. And there's also a part of me that also realizes that our bowling in that space still has a lot of work to do in terms of experience and learning a lot, which is why I'm glad that Dale Steyn was actually, you know, featuring in that series, because I think his presence brought a calming influence into, you know, that lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a series like this is important, especially with the T20 World Cup coming up in October, where you want to play the best and you may get beaten by the best. But let me tell you, we push the English very, very close. There's a lot of hard work that needs to happen in terms of the bowling.
Yeah.
But in T20 cricket, it sucks to be a bowler. It really, really does suck to be a bowler. And I think, you know, even the best bowlers in the world, you know, we'll have an off day in T20 cricket. And I think we need more games with the best teams. And I'm so glad the Aussie series is coming up immediately after facing the English. Because, you know, when your Warners get going and, you know, your Finches get going, how will our young bowling lineup step up to the challenge? And I'd like to see an improvement from the English series.
What's also very important in the short formats of the game is having quality all-rounders. There's someone who made a comment on Twitter, if I can find it very quickly. I can't find, here it is. And they tweeted the following thought. Nkululeko Gcimele says, the biggest problem you see best with our cricket is that we don't have all-rounders. That is the big problem. Someone else challenged him to that claim, and then he responded to the challenge by saying, give me one all-rounder that is on the same level with someone like Ben Stokes. Do any of you have an answer?
Well, no one, but you know, Ben Stokes is the best cricketer in the world. You know, to say, well, why is there no one on Ben Stokes? Well, because Ben Stokes is an absolute freak of nature. He's an absolute monster. He's without question the best cricketer in the world. And I don't know, the success of the past in South African sports, rugby, football, cricket, even though I know we haven't won a World Cup, we are kind of victims of our own success when we start building narratives during the lean time.
That's such an important point, right? Yeah. But if we do that, sorry to interrupt you, you've got to go to a break, but just give me a name or two. You don't even have to justify, just instinct and based on your experience as a sport journalist. Who in the current squad, for example, in terms of narrative, have the potential, if all goes well, to be, for example, our next Jacques Collis?
Andile Petlakwa and Vian Mulder. I think these are two young players. I mean, Petlakwa is what did Simongile say? He's 23. I mean, it always blows my mind how young he is.
That's true.
He's got the potential. We just got to have a bit of patience with the guy.
Absolutely.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 for the Curious.
Wrapping up our conversation about the Proteas, we've been doing a post-mortem of their performances in recent weeks and to some extent recent months and over the last year or three, and also the quest to rebuild so that we can get back to being excellent consistently. Please keep your comments short because we've got little time left. Kolani, good morning.
Morning, Eusebius.
Yes, sir. What do you want to say?
The planning going to World Cups has been flawed. If you check your India going to 2011, they had to ask Sachin not to retire. Check at the age of the guy. He's a master. You know he's about to retire, but you had to just delay that. Check your Australia before that. Now check England. England failed in 2015, but guess what they did? When they brought in Morgan, the first thing that they did, Morgan said, guys, we're not attacking. In terms of betting, we're not attacking. We have the bowlers, but things, we keep on getting 280, 240. Mm-hmm. Let's get the scores far so that if the team comes, we can be able to defend. Mm-hmm. If they get 300, we will take that score. If you can check that first year after the World Cup, we tell you now, go and check. England almost took every series because they were planning for which World Cup? Their whole World Cup.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting take. Adil? How's it?
Hi, CBS. My opinion is that you cannot debate the problems in cricket without looking at the problems in South African sport in general. There are basically three animals that's involved in sports administration, whether it's from the operational side or whether it's from the strategic management perspective. There are those who performed excellent on the field of play. Then you have those who's outsiders, who through political connectivity gets brought into South African sport because of political connectivity. And then the third element is those people who's performed excellent on the pitch itself and have academic qualifications to back that up. Rassie Erasmus brought that to South African rugby, and we saw the results thereof. But where they are horribly, horribly going wrong here is that everybody's talking about the World Cup that's coming up now. And we've looked at the excellent youngsters that we have coming to the system, and the ones that you've mentioned, that Lakwaya, Jonathan Swart, etc. We should not be selecting a team for this year's World Cup. We should be looking at the squad that will be playing in 2024. Mm. And then, out of that squad, we identify the team that will be playing. And it is that strategic intent that is missing. We should take the knocks now in order for these guys to become battle-hardened in 2024.
Absolutely, that's a beautiful point, and that speaks to what both Daniel and Tibongile were saying about the context within which current performances that disappoint you need to be situated. Absolutely correct, and take a medium to long-term view. Lincoln, keep it to 30 seconds for me. Are you still passionate about watching the Proteas as a fan?
Yeah, I am currently boycotting the Proteas at the moment. I mean, Graham and his whole white party is just, you know, it's disgusting to watch. You cannot have average players as Paul Harris, who was a very terrible spinner himself, and Charles Langefeld leading our coaching team in the bowling attack. I mean, if you're gonna get to world class heights, you're gonna need a player that have been there, that have felt the euphoria, you know, of performing at that level.
So who do you have in that squad that will give you confidence in terms of coaching or management?
Right now should be our bowling coach. The guy is constantly getting injured. He isn't at that peak anymore. So take him right now and you build upon with him.
That's interesting. A really interesting take. I'm going to give you 1 minute each. How do we approach the Aussies who are here? Many other themes we didn't get to, Pillar Sunday. I wanted to us to also talk about Quinny. I thought he did really well in this series, and no sign that the new responsibilities of captaincy will get in the way, being an excellent wicketkeeper batsman as well. You can either comment on that or take your 1 minute and just look forward to the Aussie series as you wish to use it. Your 60-second start now. Pillar Sunday.
Look, I think I want to split it into 30 seconds each. I think Quinton de Kock is one of those simple cricketers who have a simple approach to cricket, and see ball, hit ball, but he also has sort of garnered a lot of respect from his teammates, which I think is that has made him thrive, particularly in the captaincy role. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to the next sort of challenge for him. Mm. Australia is going to be very good. I think they're going to challenge our skills a whole lot more than England. They've got destructive batsmen in their lineup in the likes of Aaron Finch, David Warner, Steve Smith, and you can name a few others. So I think for us, the main objective is to try and improve our skills and try and improve our batting, our bowling.
Absolutely.
So that we can have a good balance between the bowling performance and the batting performance, so that we can win games more consistently. Mm.
Absolutely agree with you. Daniel, I'm going to give you 40 seconds.
Yeah, more of the same. There were enough positives. As you say, Quinny's captaincy. The middle order, I guess, could do some work, but yes. David Miller showed signs of his potential as long as he has. For me, there's no need to hit the panic button on the white ball side. I would like to see more of the same positive mindsets. And yeah, I'd back South Africa to beat Australia in the series.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. Sibongile, a little chuckle there in the background. The last 45 seconds go to you.
Yes, for sure. We always love a good South African Aussie battle, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing them play in the smaller venues in the country. I mean, seeing them play in Bloemfontein, Paarl, Potch, just so that those crowds get some really, really good cricket in their backyard. And I agree completely. One of the best things about being a South African cricket supporter is how diverse the support and fan base is in the country. I mean, black, white, man, woman, child. When you go to a stadium to watch a game of cricket in South Africa, it is like looking at the country.
Yes.
And, you know, this is why we are so passionate about this team and following their successes and their failures. And just on Quinny, one of the most wonderful things about him is that, yes, he wins and yes, he loses, but he moves on very quickly from both. And I think that's an amazing quality, where he is able to pack a failure away and move on to the next thing and focus on the next project. And I think he's the right person for the job.
110% agree with you. Excellent journalists and broadcasters, Daniel Gallen, Pillar Sunday, Sitlaba, and Sibongile Mafu. Thank you so much to all three of you for joining me this hour. The time just flew by.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Eusebius. Bye, James.